untouchable. Seriously, we dare you to try and touch him. Bob McCowan at Primetime Sports. Now. On the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hour number three of the radio program for this Friday, the 30th of January. Take two. Oh, no, you can't do that. It's live TV. It's prime time on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks. I'm Bob McCowan. That is Stephen Brunt. That is John Shannon. That's Ken Reed way over there. And we march on for one more hour or the better part of same. Item.
What's that?
Well, Bob caught off the April wine there. A little ticked. Just rocking on with April wine.
We can play more of it, and if you'd like to go into the control room, they'll play the whole song for you. They'll play an entire album for you. They'll play every one of their greatest hits. You know, you probably in an hour can hear them each five times. Would you like to leave?
No, it's cool.
All right. Stop your complaining then. It's a dated item. We announced on this program the return of Paul Beeston more than a week ago, subsequently confirmed by others. But let's take one more shot at it before we put this to bed. Paul Beeston will join us, by the way, next Tuesday on this program between 6 and 7. So he'll be here for a full hour in studio. Whoa. So we'll be able to talk to him about all kinds of stuff. Having said that, this created quite a stir in the media, but also among Blue Jay fans. And I think when all was said and done, a significant consensus of the Blue Jay fans that I heard from through the various platforms, whether it's emails or telephone calls or Twitter or whatever it was that this was a shameful exercise that should never have been exercised in public, and that Rogers is to blame for this escapade from which they had to exit. Is that fair? Is that enough of an explanation?
Well, who made the public part? You know, if it was made public by anybody, I guess it was made public by Jerry Reinsdorf, right? It, you know, there are a couple of ways. Look, there are a lot of people are very loyal to Beeston. There's also people in the fan base who say we haven't won anything for a dog's age and it's time to turn the page. We probably should have somebody else in here, you know? That they haven't won anything since Pat Gillick left. But in terms of what they did, you know, Paul Beeston's contract expired in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't choose to renew it at that point or extend it. Somebody, it would appear to be Edward Rogers, phoned two other teams for permission to talk to guys who were under contract, which is kind of how the protocol works. You know, generally teams will say yay or nay, but they generally allow guys to, if they're going to take a promotion at least, to talk to somebody else. Jerry Reinsdorf, who was a very loyal friend of Paul Beeston's, said, "Why? What? How dare you do this?" And you know, that's kind of where the public part of this came in. So, but you know, up to that point, I'm not sure that they actually did anything wrong. You know, they were trying to turn the page here.
Here's what I would say. Do you want to jump in?
Well,
on
I just
that,
the,
on
that? I mean, I don't. Any corporation on the corporate side would have a much more fluid exit strategy.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be headlines in every newspaper and discussion points on multiple radio stations.
That is correct.
And so I have no issue with Paul Beeston leaving after next year. It's the process how we got to having him come back for one more year to announce that he's going to exit next year that is the issue for me. And the same key points that this company would do to fire an executive vice president did they put in place to dismiss the guy who was running the Blue Jays?
I guess what we don't know is what their conversation was with Paul Beeston
right.
when his contract,
right.
You know, because I would assume that there was a conversation at some point, because if, you know, your contract ran out or my contract ran out, there'd be a conversation saying, hey, what's the plan here,
yeah.
guys?
Yeah.
Well, that conversation should have taken place months before.
Well, I don't know if it did or it didn't, Bob. Like, do you think that just they went silent?
I'm going to ask Paul next week.
You know, and Paul's not a shrinking violet.
No, and I suspect Paul will be reasonably transparent about it, but I don't know for sure. We're going to find out on Tuesday. But I think there's a process that this corporation or any corporation would go through, especially with a guy who essentially was one of the anchors of the franchise from 1976, a guy who's on the Wall of Fame, a guy who's been the, you know, as much as Pat Gillick, the face of this franchise for nearly four decades. Mm-hmm. I think regardless of what you think of his performance, and I acknowledge you're right, and the people who say, well, he hasn't won anything for 20 years, get rid of him. I get that, but that's not how you dismiss. This is how you dismiss somebody who's been there for 2 years. Well, not somebody who's been here off and on for 40.
But the truth is, we don't know, right? We don't know what the conversation.
It doesn't
was.
Matter, Stephen. I would have made sure that I've made my decision with Paul and made such an announcement, and then I go looking for a replacement. Clearly, Paul wanted to stay.
Yeah, he'd have to play ball with him.
And Rodgers didn't want him to stay.
Correct. I think those two things are absolutely true.
Then Rodgers should have fired him.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Either way, no matter how you cut it, no matter how you look at it, whatever's true or not true, Rodgers mishandled this situation. Now, I don't know specifically whether it was Edward or somebody else in the organization or the CEO or as a group, but this was abysmally handled for a guy who is the face of baseball now in this country, arguably. And I think he deserved better. He deserved better treatment than having this all explode in his face. And it was more the U.S. media with all the speculation than anybody else. Is guys who are on this program mm-hmm. on a regular basis from ESPN and Fox and other places who fueled this story, especially when it got to Duquette.
Yeah, well, with the Orioles were fueling the story, obviously. From
and
their
the
side.
Orioles, or, well, you know, sure.
And Jerry Reinsdorf.
And the White Sox, too, sure.
Yeah, and, you
but
know.
Williams and the White Sox, that story lasted about an hour.
That first weekend, really.
It was the start, and the two names that were mentioned were Duquette and Williams. Yeah. And Williams clearly wasn't coming, and Williams, whether he wanted to or not, didn't fight, and that was over. Nobody talked about it afterwards.
Right.
Then it was all Duquette.
Well, and, you know, this is where they got into a bind, really, Bob. Because that stuff blew up quickly, right? And there was a lot of stories. There was the Reinsdorf story, the beginning of the Duquette story. There were stories in the Toronto media, guys who were very loyal to Paul, saying, look, Rodgers is sticking a knife in Paul Beeston's back. And then it kind of died down over Christmas, right? So there was still a lag in there where this could have been done.
Been
right?
resolved.
But they got caught in that limbo, clearly, with the Orioles. They got caught in something which they couldn't manage with Peter Angelos. And then they were stuck. Then they're kind of half pregnant. Right? That was the problem. And I agree with you. If you're going to move on from Paul, you say to Paul, and again, I don't know if they said what they said to him, but I think you say, look, we're going to move on. We're going to look for your replacement right now. We will handle your departure in any way you want to handle your departure. But, you know, if they get Dan Duquette, if they get him out of Baltimore, Paul Beeston's not the president anymore.
Well, that's the point.
Right. So that I agree
with
you on that.
There was
going to
be no going away party, which, essentially there will be this year. Now he's a president of a club. It's not going to be the same as what we saw with Jeter in New York, for example.
But it's kind of that, right?
It's kind of that for a guy who's as iconic as he is in this marketplace, in this environment. And they never – I don't think they took that into consideration. And here's – there's one of two things happened here, and I don't think that Paul's going to answer this question, but I'm going to ask it on Tuesday. Was this about Paul Beeston initially, or was this about Alex Anthopoulos? And I don't preclude the possibility that Alex Anthopoulos was a significant player in this. From this standpoint, I believe that there are people in this organization, in Rodgers, who wanted Alex fired, and Paul didn't. And it became a cat fight. And Paul wasn't going to back down.
Don't you fire them both then, Bob?
Somebody let
didn't
him,
do either.
Somebody let him sign Russell Martin, though, right? So
they didn't do either because they didn't have a replacement.
Well, you play the season out, and maybe you can get rid of them both if that's the ultimate plan.
This coming season?
That's something to look forward to.
But they were prepared. This is an organization that was prepared to fire Beeston. Or not renew his contract.
I was going to say, fire is the
Duquette
right word.
And bring Duquette in right away. A guy with zero experience on the business side of baseball, to the best of my knowledge.
By the way,
he's a baseball guy. He's not a business guy. The job function of Paul Beeston is to run the business of the Toronto Blue Jays. not the baseball side.
Wouldn't be the first guy in pro sports to come in and run a business side with no experience. I mean, we see it all the time, don't we?
Yeah, we're seeing it with the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Exactly. You've seen it with Brendan
Shannon.
How's
that working out?
The problem here is, and you guys hit on it, any corporation, no matter what the business, if your main man is going out, you're going to look ahead. It was just executed poorly, and it got out, and it leaked, and it was egg on their face, and it looked horrible. It doesn't look good. It's horrible PR for them, but...
Well, the announcement that they made after the Duquette stuff finished was the announcement they should have made at the end of the season. We're going to look for a replacement. Paul has agreed to stay if we don't find that replacement for one more year. And away you go. They just thought, naively, that they could keep this thing quiet. And they couldn't. They didn't. They bungled it. As bad as you can bungle anything, they did it. And then made everybody look bad.
And as you well know, and all of us know around this table, the community in professional sports is very, very small.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it even crosses over different sports. But the baseball community is unbelievably small, as it is for basketball, hockey, and football. There's just it's not a business universe for sure.
Well, and if you know Paul, one thing you know for sure is that he is as well liked in the baseball community as anybody is or could be.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's his friend. He talks to everybody. He is counsel to owners, to presidents, to general managers, to other people.
I'm not sure the new commissioner likes him very much, but that's
well because he backed the wrong fish yeah. in that race. The notion of doing this behind his back or keeping it quiet and then sliding him out the back door was crazy.
Again, I don't know that they did it behind his back, Bob, and I think Paul's a smart guy.
Well, no,
I think in terms of the egg on the face of Rogers, and there's lots of it. Paul probably applied a fair bit of it. You know, he's pretty clever about how the world works. He knows how the media works. He's got real good friends, and
he played this very well.
I think he played this extremely well, and I think. You know, in that sense, he played his hand far better than they
Let
did.
Me ask you this.
Well, but if they wanted him out.
They should have done it.
They should have done it.
Unless he just said, look, I'm not going to go quietly. I'm not going to play it that way. Well, I want to stay. And then it's going to be a mess. Well, then you got to fire him. You don't have to fire him because his contract's
up. What's the fallout from this, though? Are we going to spend all summer talking about if the cat's going to come?
Is this going to be a big
distraction? Is this going to hurt the on-field product?
No and no.
Nah, no, no.
But let me ask you this. Will he finish the season? Will he finish the season?
Yes.
Who are we talking about? Paul?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, but I would not be shocked that before the end of the season.
There's a new body in place.
Yes. That if the guy is there that they want and he's available and they can make a deal, they will say, here's our new president.
Yeah.
So, and then whatever the protocol would be.
Right.
And but, I got nothing against Duquette, but I hope they get away from this notion that you have to have a baseball guy at the top of the organization.
See, to me, the thing that, with everything that's been discussed, wouldn't you think it'd be wise to take the business knowledge and baseball knowledge and the political knowledge of a guy like Beeston and have him help you find a new president?
That's what he was supposed to do, what, 3-4 years ago when he hired himself?
He found himself. Depends what that relationship's like, John.
I think that relationship is highly strained.
Well, this goes back to, that doesn't augur well for the health of, the business side of this franchise for the year.
Well, it's going to be awkward, Paul has run this business, not at arm's length from Rogers, but, that's the way he has always operated with owners, here's the numbers and here's what we're planning on doing and please don't get too involved in what we're doing, he will continue to try and do that.
But
he's a different owner now.
All-star break and this team's a game up in the wild card race. Does any of this matter?
This year, coming year?
Yeah, let's say at the All-Star break.
This issue goes away.
Right. This is the business
until the end of the season.
Right.
Unless the season's a disaster, and then we're blowing everybody.
Oh, then,
but,
yeah.
Well, yeah. But Beeston's going anyway.
Now, I know it's ancient history, but and I was not around the baseball club at all, but I keep getting told stories about the Peter Hardys of the world and the bank guys and the brewery guys that became not just brewery guys and bank guys, but they became baseball guys.
Well, I don't know if Peter Hardy was ever a baseball guy, but he was a good guy, though. He was a great guy. But you know what the thing was with those guys, John? They had a tremendous luxury. They bought the team low.
$7.5 million.
$7.5 million.
Wow.
the value of the equity of the team went through the roof.
Sure.
The beer business. And they got a stadium built for him for free.
Yeah.
You know, so it was hearts and flowers, right? That's why they had the highest payroll in baseball.
I guess my point is that the relationship between Major League Baseball, whether it be the commissioner's office or the other clubs, was beyond Gillick and Beeston then. Those guys had a relationship beyond the Blue Jays. And so that it's difficult for this board. I mean, who's the highest baseball ranking person in the Blue Jays? Whether you like it or not. It's Paul Beeston.
Yeah.
Who was above him in the Rogers world that could talk to Rob Manfred, could talk to Bud? They left themselves open on this one. You know, when you talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs, whether you like it or not, there are members of the board that can deal and can be accountable around the league to talk league issues.
I'm going to tell you something, John. Paul Beeston's current relationship with Rob Manfred would work against him. No, you know, that's what I'm saying. I think they would prefer to have somebody else dealing with the commissioner right now.
I totally agree with you. My point is have they let themselves exposed that they don't?
Well, we've got it for a year, right? Okay.
I don't think it's critical. I don't think it's critical at all. And here's why I don't think it's critical, because Paul Beeston did not have a good relationship with Bud.
Well, an interesting relationship with Bud, but yeah, well, Bud hired him for a while.
Yeah, well, yeah. And then, but it didn't end well. And it was strained. I can't speak to exactly how strained, and I think Beeston was very diplomatic around Bud, but every once in a while in a social setting, Paul would say something, and you understood that there was some tension there. Now, I don't know what his relationship with Manfred is, other than he picked the other horse in the race. Mm-hmm. He backed the other horse. Is that enough to make it untenable? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if Beeston knows the answer to that. One thing I know is I don't think it's a Paul issue. It may be a Manfred issue. I think if Paul wanted the other guy, I think Paul would shrug his shoulders and say, okay, I'll work with this guy.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he was the last.
If he worked with Bud.
He went right to the wall for the other guy, so I'm not sure if that's true.
I understand. Well, I think he thought the other guy was the right guy. I mean, otherwise he wouldn't have done it. All right, let's talk about the on-field stuff. Let's put that to bed, because this will unfold however it unfolds, and it's not going to happen anytime soon, we don't believe. Oh, one more thing. Is anybody else around this table of the opinion that Duquette would be the wrong guy?
You know, it's
because I'm firmly in that position. I like Dan Duquette. If you're going to fire Alex Anthopoulos and look for a general manager, I think Duquette would be a candidate for that. I do not see Duquette as the replacement for Paul Beeston. You need a business guy. You need and if you want a business guy, you want to get a guy with chops. You want a guy who's run a sports franchise before, or run a business before, not a general manager. There's nobody I'm closer to in the world than Pat Gillick. Pat Gillick would never have been the right guy to be president of the Toronto Blue Jays. And Pat Gillick knew it. His forte was baseball. Mm-hmm. This is not about hiring a baseball guy and making him the top dog. It's about hiring a business guy who, in Beeston's case, a professional accountant who can manage the numbers, put the plans in place, understand how the market works, do the deals, and support the general manager who runs the baseball side with his office. That's the guy they need. And Duquette may be able to do it, but why would you hire a guy with no experience? I don't understand that. Why? Williams is no different. Now, Williams has been a little bit in the front office the last year or so, so at least he's got a little bit of experience there. He actually makes more sense than Duquette does.
To be honest, to me, I'm not all that passionate about it one way or the other. To me, and maybe this is very ignorant of me to say, and it probably is, I just want to watch some baseball. And if you get a guy in there who's competent enough, that's fine. To me, as long as you hire the right GM, I could care less who the president is.
Well, I think what one thing we'll probably all agree on is the leash is getting shorter and shorter on Alex Anthopoulos. I believe management wanted him out. I believe that Beeston's defense of Alex became an issue. Absent some extraordinary success for the Toronto Blue Jays this year, Alex Anthopoulos is not going to survive.
Yeah, but you know, the ownership signed off on that on the Russell Martin deal, though, Bob. And that's, you know, that's a long term deal. That's not a deal that Paul Beeston authorizes. That's a deal that Rogers authorizes. So they clearly backed him on that.
My question is, wasn't last year a make or break year for Alex?
No, and
hear that going into last year. But we had him on the other day, Bob. He didn't seem all that concerned about it, at least publicly. He didn't.
Well, he's not going to acknowledge that.
And he's, you know, and again, he's not managing for. He is managing into the future. You know, and you look at the way things are set up with the back. Loaded contracts.
He has to do the job like he's going to be there forever, but understanding he won't be.
I'm not trying to be obstinate about this, but the process of Alex signing Russell Martin would be, I think we can get Martin for $55 million, 7 years, whatever the numbers were, takes it to Beeston. Beeston takes it to the board?
I would think that's the process, yeah. Or takes it to somebody. I don't know if it has to go to the board.
Whether Edward or Guy.
I would think. Yeah.
Okay, and
I'm not convinced of that.
Okay, so my question is what baseball knowledge would those guys have that Beeston wouldn't order to approve it?
That's my point. This is the same issue that the team
down the street has when the board gets involved in player trades for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
No, they just have to make a case, though, John. Right? Their job is to go and say, okay, this is, you know, again, not assuming that their baseball expertise, but you're saying this is what this guy is, this is what he's going to do, and this is why we're making the commitment, this is how we're backloading the deal, and why we're backloading the deal, and this is what we believe. And, you know, and what you do as a board, you say either, you know, that's an insane amount of money, and here's how much payroll you've got to work with, and we're not going to budge on that, or you say, okay, you know, if you're convinced of it, but... You know, that's on you.
I don't believe that was the case for any of the moves that were made this season because it all came with under the budget that was preset.
There's no chance the Russell Martin signing happens without sign off from Rogers.
I disagree. I guarantee that this is kind of the way I asked the question
because if it fit into the budget, then Beeston and Anthopoulos would and should be allowed to do what they want to do within the scheme.
But they just don't. Right? But it is sort of, John. But if it's something of that magnitude, you know, that kind of term,
I think
there's no chance.
I think you tell the people, whoever your supervisor is, whether it's Keith Pelley or Edward Rogers or whoever it is, or the CEO, I think you tell them this is what we're going to do. You advise them as to what you're doing, but I don't think you have to get permission.
Oh, I think you do, Bob. And I feel pretty strongly they got permission.
The question becomes, it becomes the business acumen as opposed to the baseball acumen that makes the decision.
Well, there's, you know,
because there's no baseball acumen.
Yeah, but that's the same in any sport, though, right, John? Whoever's signing the check is not necessarily going to, you know, is not going to be an expert in the sport. You're taking advice from somebody. Right? You're generally. And, you know, in Russell Martin's case, they also probably made a marketing argument for him as well.
Maybe.
I'm sure they did. You know, wait till those exhibition games in Montreal, and then I'll show you the marketing argument for Russell Martin.
See how many jerseys they make.
Yeah, watch him speaking, doing all those interviews in French. Yeah.
What do we think of the Blue Jays roster the way it sits right now?
Oh, are we actually going to talk baseball?
Yeah. A little bit.
This is like actually talking Super Bowl about the Super Bowl.
Whoa.
We're going to get to that in a minute.
Okay.
What do you think of the roster?
Well, who's the second baseman?
Don't know. Probably the
patchwork.
Probably
is
Travis.
I don't know if he'll start the season there, but it'll be...
Meister, Sturris, probably.
One of those guys.
A platoon job.
I mean, there are still, I mean...
They'll look at Sturris, they'll look at Goins, they'll look at the new kid from Detroit.
Travis, yeah.
Travis.
Are you the three outfielders you're comfortable with?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Well, you got a kid in center field, but he looks good.
He's going to be fine.
Yep. He looks good. He'll be fine. He'll hit better than the guy who was
I'm going to miss Colby.
You're going to miss Colby. You're going to miss Bob ragging on Colby. That's what you're going to miss.
I'm going to miss ragging on Colby.
Yeah.
Because I like this kid.
I guess you got to figure out where you're going to slot your pitchers. And the Blue Jays have admitted as much. They have to figure out where they're going to slot a guy like Sanchez, where they're going to slot a guy like Norris. And
Sanchez is going to make the roster. Norris may not.
Sanchez is going to be on the roster, but where is he going to be on the roster? Mm-hmm. Is he going to be in the bullpen or is he going to be a starter?
80% starter.
I'd say he's probably going to start, but they're going to have to figure out the bullpen, and that's going to be a process that I think is going to evolve throughout the season because I don't think they really know. They're just kind of throwing some arms in there and hoping they find the next Steve Delabarre.
Spring training is going to be really interesting, mostly because of the young pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know there's some really interesting possibilities there. Sanchez, if you know, it kind of depends on you know what you. Like what a guy like if you decide Estrada's your fifth starter, for instance, the guy they got from Milwaukee, although he was really effective in the pen at the end of last year.
Right.
So, you know, is he a fifth guy swingman? You know, Norris is a guy who, you know, it's interesting all that prospect stuff coming out in the last few days. All of the, you know, by and large, regarded as their number one prospect by everybody who's in that business right now, ahead of Sanchez, ahead of everybody's Dan Norris. Yeah. So, you know, you got some really interesting possibilities in that rotation. And, you know, it may be that Sanchez is their best option to close, even though that's not the – they'll stretch him out, and that's what they've said they're going to do. But I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up closing because, you know, you may be able to – you know, if Norris wins the job
– they could make that move. It just seems to me that this is an evolution. Sanchez came up last year. They put him in the bullpen just to look at him. He'd thrown enough innings. They didn't want to start him. They didn't really need him to start. They took a look at him. He was impressive. Norris is less experienced. I don't know. Maybe he dazzles in spring training, and maybe they give him a shot. I think he's a year behind Sanchez. I look for them to put Norris either at Double A, where he'll face some good opposition, or maybe at Triple A, where he'll face, you know, wannabes.
I don't think it'll be lower in Triple A.
Yeah, except that you know, historically,
better hitters are in Double A, aren't they?
So a lot of better hitters in Double
better
A.
Better prospects.
Wow. There's better pros.
In any event, better pros. Okay, it doesn't matter. And then they look to bring him up in August or September. Do the Sanchez thing with him.
Now, here's another thing. Everyone's all confounded about Sanchez. Is he your closer? Is he your starter? Everybody used to come up and start in the bullpen, right? They're bringing this kid up old school, which I think is a good thing. But everyone just seems to be so wanting to peg this guy as either starter or closer. I think it's just, like you said, the word evolution, Bob. And I think that's what it's going to be.
It is an evolution.
They're just totally going to figure it out as they go.
You know, we talked about it millions of times. The 92 Blue Jays had four really good starting pitchers in their bullpen during the playoffs. Guys who went on to have real good careers as starting pitchers. And they were in the bullpen for that World Series. Yeah,
they're playing a little jazz here going into the season. They're just kind of improvise as they go. That may be a good thing. It may be a really, really bad thing.
You know, they were all young pitchers who didn't have tremendous experience as starters. You shorten your starting rotation. So they put them in the bullpen. And they all worked out fine. And they all wound up getting careers as starters. I don't think Sanchez is ever going to be a reliever unless it's at the end of his career, like a Dennis Eckersley kind of guy. I think he's going to start for 8 or 10 years in the big leagues. The question is it this year? And the danger that I have is if you put him in the bullpen because you think you need a closer, I think that's the wrong reason.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the wrong reason to put him there. And I want to see what the guy's got. I want him coming out of spring training as in the starting rotation. And if Norris has to wait a month or 4 months to get there, so be it. He's a baby. You got time with
Norris.
They're
all kind of the same age, these guys, right? There's not a huge amount of difference there. And I don't see how it hurts Sanchez. You know, all happens in the pen with him is you cut down on his repertoire. He's, you know, you're not going to see, but you know,
I get all that.
His repertoire was, well, you know, he's walking a lot of guys as a starter last year. He had control issues when they cut him down in the bullpen. And he essentially threw one pitch. You know, mm-hmm. most of his time in the bullpen, 80% of the time.
Yeah, it was good too.
Yeah, it's real good. I think there are worse alternatives than that.
You know, we're all putting a lot of faith in Marcus Stroman too. We all just by the way we don't even mention the guy.
Well,
it's like we assume he's just going to go
more jinx is hit more players than you can count. I think long term, he'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't get to the point. What can this team do? Assuming the roster doesn't change dramatically. Now they thought there was a report that they'd signed a relief pitcher.
I think it fell apart.
The timing would suggest he failed his physical.
Yeah.
Oh.
Or they found something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what that looks.
So the
like.
Offer was taken off the table.
Yeah.
It would have been contingent on a physical. I think Steven's right with that. So best guess, are they better?
Oh, I think they're better, you know. But I mean, you combine the injury bug. Are they a playoff team? I'm still not convinced they're a playoff team. And then you know, the two guys you talk about taking Stroman for granted, but they still have two veteran pitchers that have to perform at a certain level too.
I think that's my biggest concern.
I don't worry
right
about
there.
That. You're going to get your 200.
Well, you're going to get out of Burley.
Yeah. Burley, I don't worry about him at all.
Yeah,
you know, I think it's a really their young pitching is exciting. And the next wave of it coming with Hoffman, you know, and Castro and some of these other guys that are coming is really exciting. So, you know, I take my chances with young pitching. And remember, Tampa's white flag this season.
Oh, right? Yeah.
We have no Tampa Rays anymore.
No.
Baltimore has spun their wheels this offseason.
They've done nothing.
Boston's loaded up. Yankees, still you're looking at Sabathia's health, and other guys' health, Pineda's health. There's a lot of questions in their rotation. You know, it's not a bad setup for the Jays right now. And I'll tell you, getting rid of Joe Maddon and getting and the GM and Tampa is a great thing for Toronto.
Yeah, so, I think so.
But, it's going to come down. We're going to be talking about the young pitchers, and that could be a great thing.
Mm-hmm. For me, it's who's going to get hurt and pitching. And I everyone's talking about, are you going to unload Navarro? Are you going to unload Navarro? There's nothing wrong with keeping Deonna Navarro and having his bat on your bench.
Well, if you can't get anything in return,
right,
sure.
Exactly. And someone's invariably going to get hurt. Who's going to replace him? Is this team deep enough?
Well, ain't going to be Deonna Navarro.
No, so they've run into injuries the last couple of years. So, if they're healthy, I think they could have a run at a wild card. Why not?
Bottom of the hour, we'll take the break, and then we'll get you ready for Super Bowl 49. This is Primetime on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks.
Now, Primetime is anytime. Subscribe to the Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, pay attention. 21 before the hour. It's like herding cats with you guys.
We're having fun.
Well,
good thing you didn't wear your blue suit tonight. That would have been too much, wouldn't it? But we do have the stripes going.
Not like me to wear pinstripes.
It's like bankers. The banker side of the table here. John's got the green tie.
Do you think anyone else cares about your suits?
All those people watching us on TV.
I've been complimented.
They couldn't care less.
Green tie is kind of a radical but interesting
choice.
I have
been complimented for my 12th man tie on Twitter all afternoon.
Oh, okay.
Oh, God, on Twitter?
12th man.
Oh, well then, by all means.
You nice read segue, Twitter?
John. Best tie ever.
12th man.
He's getting us to, that's nicely done.
Thank you.
If the little plastic pins break off, can you tie it yourself? Item, the Super Bowl is finally here.
Nice fleece, Bob.
Where does Russell Wilson rank among the quarterbacks in the National Football League? Or do we have to wait for Sunday to actually answer that question? In other words, it's fluid with respect to him. Still a young quarterback.
Maybe we have to find
out. He's got a Super Bowl ring.
Yeah, we have to find out if 2 weeks ago was a blip.
Mm-hmm. We closed the show.
You know what? He's supposed to be the guy that, like that whole zone option thing, he's the only guy that's still surviving off it. Kaepernick went away, Griffin went away, and Wilson's still doing his thing. No quarterback rushed for more yards this year. The guy can improvise.
He's got a horse for a running back, which helps.
Yeah.
That's number one. He doesn't have great wide receiving core, and they got rid of their most exciting offensive player. They traded him in midseason. That doesn't happen very often. I think if the Seahawks have to rely on Russell Wilson dropping back and throwing the football to beat the Patriots, they're not going to win, right? So that's not how they win. And it's that combination of Marshawn Lynch and Wilson running the ball, and or the threat of Wilson running the ball, and then some, that wasn't, but for a couple of bounces, that wasn't good enough to beat Green Bay 2 weeks ago. So, but for a dropped onside kick and a fake field goal that worked and a bunch of weird things that happened. We would have been having a very different conversation about Russell Wilson right now.
Oh, yeah. I think that's my point, too.
Well, the intangible of his leadership skills that other sports have even recognized. I mean, Major League Baseball drafted him. He's had gone to some camps to talk to the young kids in baseball and in spring training. And I think that's the one thing. He seems to have that ability to lead people, which... not every quarterback, not every great quarterback in football can. You look at guys that have great tools that can't lead or become selfish, and Jay Cutler's at the top of that list. But Russell Wilson has that ability to run well enough, throw well enough, and lead better than most that makes him, I think, a huge weapon for the Seahawks.
Is he one of the great quarterbacks in the National Football
League? I think it's way too early, Bob. I think it's way too early.
It's a great team. It's a really,
sure it
really sound football team, a really well-coached football team.
And he usually doesn't make many mistakes. Usually.
Usually. four interceptions last game.
Was an anomaly.
And three of them were true. One of them, the guy screwed up for him. Curse. So,
I don't know if Tom Brady is in the conversation among, I guess he is in the conversation among the greatest quarterbacks of all time. I don't know whether I'd put him there or not. I'm a Montana guy, but I'd certainly consider him. Does winning this Super Bowl make any difference?
No,
not
that
for
discussion.
Him. No,
he's done more with less. That's what I look at him is in terms of supporting cast. And I think that this year, I think getting to this Super Bowl this year, I think is a legacy moment. Whether he wins it or not, you know, it's obviously if he wins, it's a big deal. But getting to six, but getting there on a year when 4 weeks in, everybody's writing the team off, looking and saying, you know, not only is Brady done, but look what he's got to work with.
After the Kansas City game.
That's just it, Stephen. When you say Montana, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Well, Jerry Rice.
Rice. When you say Tom Brady, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Some anonymous guy playing wide receiver since Randy Moss left.
Right. Yeah, either that or Julian Edelman playing the role of Wes Welker.
You know? Exactly.
And then he'll make somebody else into Wes Welker the next time. You know, Gronkowski is a freak, and that's he is a legitimately great football player and can do all kinds of weird things that guys that are playing that position shouldn't be able to do. But look at, you know, it's the offensive line is better. You know, got a lot better as the year went on. But, you know, look at the running backs, right? Look at the rotating cast of guys who've been at running back.
Well, and remember, early in the season, they got rid of their best offensive lineman to Tampa. And everybody thought they were really going down the tube. And they have improved every game.
Week four, Tom Brady was written off. It was over.
And Blunt, I mean, the way Blunt ran the ball last week, I mean, unbelievable.
But I love Montana too, Bob. I got to see him and I...
So which one, if you had to vote?
I'm not sure I'd vote for anybody ahead of Tom Brady right now. Honestly.
You know, you may be right.
And I've kind of seen this thing beginning to end from the first, the first Super Bowl, and you thought, you know, when he took over from Bledsoe, Bledsoe got hurt that year and said, boy, that's the guy, again, I always say he was behind Michael Bishop on their depth chart at one point. You know, guy nobody thought was a blue chip prospect coming out of Michigan.
What was he, like the fifth quarterback at Michigan until his senior year or something like that?
Yeah, he was just a guy, right? And I know a lot of talk about Belichick deserve it. A lot of talk about some of the guys at various offensive coordinators because he's also gone through different coaches, right?
Oh, my God, yeah.
But I just keep looking. Look at that ever-changing cast, you know, and when has he had
one consistent is Brady, and the consistency of the New England Patriots is now epic.
Yep.
Well, the two guys, Bob, really, the two guys.
Did Belichick make Brady or did Brady make Belichick?
And could,
that's an excellent question.
And could Belichick be able to, I mean, remember the year that Matt Castles played for them, got Castles a multi-million dollar deal in Kansas City. Not that they didn't win the Super Bowl, but they didn't have a losing record. Who's more important to whom?
Yeah.
Right.
Brady to Belichick?
Do you know the answer?
My gut tells me that, you know, Belichick's the Wizard of Oz.
But he's a defensive guy, really? Belichick's a defensive coach.
He wasn't the Wizard of Oz until he showed up in New England, though. Right?
Well, no, in Cleveland, everybody hated him.
But wait a sec. That's a long, long list.
But I think he's more than just an – I mean, he does have some input. He does some input, and he does have some ability to structure a game plan.
I think he is as smart and sneaky as anybody who's ever coached in the
innovative
league. Yeah, innovative, maybe that's the other
innovative
word.
Innovative is a nice way to say it.
Yes. Yeah. And
cup half full.
Yeah, no, and he's – again, he is on – you know, a very short list of the greatest coaches of all time in the National Football League right now. And by the time he's done, he might be number one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sentiment aside, you know, no one loves him, but you got to respect him. But Brady, I don't know that I've seen. I don't think there's a comparable in terms of a guy who, over that long a term, again, without the weapons, you know, without the kind of, there's no Hall of Fame receivers on this team. You know, there's no Hall. They're having, has he thrown the ball to a Hall of Fame receiver? You know, is Randy Moss a Hall of Fame receiver? You know, but that's like, really, that's, you know, how many great quarterbacks have gone through and not had a guy where you would say, this guy is one of the great receivers of all time? He hasn't. You know, that puts him, for me, that puts him on a different level.
Yeah. Oh, I'll buy it.
Yeah.
A couple of quick things in the last 5 minutes here. Josh Gordon, here we go again, admitted to drinking alcohol and failing a test. He says he did not know that the NFL would be testing him in the offseason. Really? Duh. Here's a two-time loser who doesn't know when he's going to be tested. You know, after he failed for codeine, they didn't test him the next offseason?
I just look at the record of the Browns with him in the lineup versus out of the lineup. I like them without him in the lineup.
First question I'm asking.
Make that argument.
If I'm Mr. Yes. If I'm Mr. Gordon, is okay. So when will you be testing me? Year round. Okay, thank you. That's all you need to know.
Well,
pretty minor sins, you know.
They were minor sins, and that's the interesting thing.
Smoking pot, you know, they shouldn't be suspended guys for smoking pot anyway.
That's another whole
other thing. But if he was smoking pot in Washington State or Colorado, is it still illegal?
Yeah, in the NFL it is.
It is, yeah.
Seriously, if you're playing in the NFL and you want
to
take...
I could put a lawyer beside me and go to court and win that.
No, because you signed that right away in the collective agreement.
In the offseason?
So you couldn't do that. You can't do it.
I think I could win that one.
Guy's a two-time loser, and he's drinking beers and drinking mixed drinks on a flight to Las Vegas. Now, should a guy, an NFL player, out of season, be allowed to go to Vegas with his teammates to blow off some steam? Sure. Should he not be allowed to drink? That's crazy. But then again, there are rules, and Gordon should know what the rules are. He's a talented, talented guy. If he gets suspended, and I'm the Cleveland Browns, I cut him loose.
The rules are stupid. I mean, the marijuana thing is stunned, but it is the law in 48 states.
He claimed he didn't know he was taking codeine. He claims he's never smoked marijuana since he's been in the NFL. It was secondhand smoke. He now claims that he only had four drinks on an air flight to Vegas. I'm prepared to agree to all this, but you got to be smarter.
Yeah, it's interesting what the NFL's tough on and what they're not tough on.
It's real interesting.
Indeed.
Yeah. Don't wear the wrong hat. Don't smoke that.
Will there be any beer sponsors during the Super Bowl?
No, never.
And by the way, we want you to talk to the media, even though you don't really want to talk to the media.
And then talk to the media about why you don't really want to talk to the media.
Yeah. And then do nothing about it when you don't talk. The Bucs are believed to be going after Marcus Mariota with the number one pick. He and Winston are obviously 1 and 1A. Which one would you take?
Well, the experts say that Mariota isn't ready for the NFL game yet because of the style of football they played at Oregon. I still maintain when all the dust settles at some point, he will be a Philadelphia Eagle somehow, some way, because of Chip Kelly. Given that, I would take Winston.
A lot less baggage, though, if you pass on Winston. There's a history there.
I don't know if you noticed, but football players have baggage.
What?
When you take Winston, are you also trading for Josh Gordon so he has somebody to go to?
And why
and
not?
Hang out with?
And why not?
Because, I mean, boy, there's peas in a pod right there.
You know what? The Raiders probably won a Super Bowl doing that stuff.
Major League Baseball is has a new commissioner. The outgoing commissioner, who just retired last weekend, among the things he said on his way out the door is he is hopeful that Major League Baseball will eventually expand into other countries. Will baseball be the first North American sport to actually go outside of North America? Will it be baseball? Not football, not basketball, not hockey.
No.
All of whom have dipped their toes elsewhere.
I'm going to go with no.
Well, unless you get real fast flights across the Pacific, where are they going to go?
I'm going to go with no, and I'm also going to make a public plea that Bud Selig please come back for all end of season award presentations, even though he's not the commissioner anymore.
And is there?
He was combing his hair on the air.
He's doing the hair.
That was when the guy was reading off the cue cards for the new car.
The stuff that comes with technology and stuff?
Yeah, and stuff.
Final item very quickly. The opening phases of Wrigley Field's renovation have not gone without controversy and troubles. There have been lawsuits, there have been complaints, and other assorted issues, not the least of which a developing rat problem in the neighborhood where the historic ballpark sits next to the has a myriad of difficulties.
Sure.
You stir up the dirt, and the rats come out.
Lots of discarded hot dogs down there.
They have to go somewhere when their home is disturbed.
There may be some who are wondering whether we were going through a renovation earlier today because, well, for Brent and Shannon and Reed.
Come on. Bring it out. Show them the belt.
The WWF champion. Have a nice weekend. Enjoy the Super Bowl. We'll see you Monday if the crick don't rise. Good night from Toronto.